Proverbs chapter 21. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. Solomon is saying that God has the ability to control kings. God has the ability to control kings. We might think that that means good kings, godly kings, guys who love the Lord. But when you study the scriptures, you see that God has the ability to control even heathen, pagan, wicked kings. Nebuchadnezzar was a ruthless man. He was the ruler of Babylon, and he went around conquering the world. And he probably thought that as he marched his armies down this strip of land by the Mediterranean and started conquered those kingdoms, conquered Syria, conquered all the kingdoms around, and then ended, and then conquered the little kingdom of Judah. He probably thought, well, I'm just picking up, you know, a few more, you know, baubles for my rings or whatever, you know. But he was doing what God wanted him to do. He was actually fulfilling a role that God had for him. God called him, through Jeremiah the prophet, God calls him his servant. Jeremiah 27:6, he says, "And now I have given all these lands," this is God speaking, "I have given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and the beasts of the field have I given him also to serve him." Another fellow, another pagan ruler named Cyrus, was the head of the Persian Empire. He was the guy that knocked off the Babylonians. He was the guy that conquered the city of Babylon. And we don't know that this guy was a believer. I mean, this guy is Persian. And yet he was actually prophesied hundreds of years before he was born. He was actually named by name. In Isaiah 44:28, it says, "Thus saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut." Now, what actually happened with Cyrus, when he conquered the city of Babylon, the impenetrable city of Babylon, the city of Babylon that had humongous walls that were, I think, 300 feet high, 70 feet wide. The walls were so wide they could drive six chariots side by side around the tops of the walls. There was two sets of walls. There was an outer set of walls, and then there was an inner set of walls. There was a river. The river Euphrates ran right through the middle of the city. Huge, huge city. All kinds of farmland and everything. It was completely self-sufficient. They had water. They had farmland. They could go on forever. Nobody could conquer Babylon. Well, Cyrus diverted the river. He had his engineers go way upstream, and they diverted the Euphrates River. But the Babylonians had these bronze gates down in the river, bars. But on the night that Cyrus did all of this, they forgot to lock the gates for some reason. It says, "I would to open before him the two-leaved gates." God promises he would open the gates for Cyrus. The whole thing could have fallen apart if they hadn't left the gates open. Cyrus was the one that, after he conquered Babylon, he told the Jews to go home. He was the one who would, and that's what it says, that he would say to Jerusalem, "Be built, lay your foundation." All this that God had control over this fellow who didn't really realize, understand what was going on. About 2,000 years ago, another fellow named Caesar Augustus, sitting on his throne in Rome, ruler of the world, decides, "Hey, I think I'll pull a neat trick. I'll command that the whole world should be taxed." Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'll show everybody how powerful I am. Let's have a humongous census. Let's tax the whole world. And because of this decision of his to tax the whole world, this young couple, pregnant couple, were required to go to Bethlehem to register and pay their taxes. And while they were there, a baby was born. fulfilling a prophecy some 500 years before in the book of Micah, where Micah writes, "But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me, that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from of old, from everlasting." How is it God ever going to get, this couple were up in Nazareth. How is he ever going to get him to Bethlehem? And he tweaks the heart of Caesar Augustus, and a census is declared. God has the ability. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. And again, gang, we might think, let's pray for godly leaders who that will happen. But even the ungodly leaders, God has a hand. I don't know. Valentine's Day. This fellow up in San Francisco, this real handsome mayor, brand new mayor, Gavin Newsom, decided to let there be homosexual marriages. Do you think he did that without God's permission? God allowed him to do it. Doesn't make it right. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to say that it's right what he did. But God allowed it because of the wickedness of our nation. He will allow things. God has the ability to touch hearts. Your boss, could this apply to your boss at work? The king's heart, the boss's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Could God use your boss? Well, I draw the line there. Not the boss. I don't know. I think sometimes we have our little worlds in such neat little packages, all wrapped up, and we just think we've got it all figured out. Maybe it's not so neat and clean. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of water. He turneth it whithersoever he will. Verse 2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the hearts. Another translation, we justify our actions by appearances. God examines our motives. Another translation, people may think they are doing what is right, but the Lord examines the heart. In other words, it's not just what I think about what I'm doing that makes it right. You will hear from time to time, people who are living in a lifestyle that we would think is a little bit out there. And they will tell you that they are having a great time and they feel no guilt at all. Maybe they were born that way. And they will say, there's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. How dare you say something about what I'm doing? Well, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but God examines the hearts. It's not what you say about your actions that count. It's what God says about your actions that count. That's what counts. It's not what I say. It's what God says. Verse 3. To do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. To do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 15. That's to the left of Proverbs. Keep your finger in Proverbs because we will be back. We're going to finish up this chapter. But let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 15. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 20. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, God sends King Saul on a mission. He's on a mission from God. And I don't know if he wore like a dark suit and dark glasses or something and played jazz or blues or whatever. But King Saul is on a mission from God, and his mission is God wants him to fight the Amalekites, a wicked, horrible people, and God wants him to fight them, and God wants him to wipe them out, completely wipe them out. God's had it up to here with the Amalekites. Saul does a pretty good job. The Amalekites that he finds, he really lets them have it. But he doesn't quite wipe them out. He does good. He does good. Maybe he gets a 90 or something. Verse 1 Samuel 15, verse 20, when the prophet Samuel showed up to look at what was going on, Saul said to Samuel, Yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and have gone the way which the Lord sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. Well, it's kind of hard to say you've utterly destroyed them when you still got one standing next to you. Okay, but it's okay, I'm just, you know. It says, but the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. Well, see, it's okay that we didn't wipe out everything because we're going to sacrifice it to God. Saul has the idea that his partial obedience was better than nothing. And after all, he's brought a little something to sacrifice. Verse 22, and Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. God would much rather that we learn to do what he says than we try to make up for it afterwards. You know, well, I'll go do my thing, but I'll go help a little bit down at the mission, or I'll send some money to, you know, some radio thing or whatever, you know, or I'll do something to make up for it. God would much, much rather that we simply learn to obey him. To do justice and judgment, back in Proverbs, it says, to do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Another translation, this is Heather's one that she's got with her. It says, well, you want to read it, verse 3? No, verse, is that verse 3? Huh. Yeah. Is that 4? Mine, that was verse 3. Huh. Oh, well. Anyway, but I like that. Clean living before God and justice with our neighbors means far more to God than religious performance. That's a whole different way, that's a little bit different way of looking at it. You know, treat people right. God would rather that you know, this word in King James says to do justice and judgment. Well, that's stuff that you do with people. To do those things, to treat people right, is more important than that you show up at church, kind of. Oh, man, am I getting in trouble if I say that? Well, show up at church, too. But you know what I'm saying? God doesn't want you to just show up at church and then just be the biggest bully in the neighborhood. Verse 4. Proverbs 21, verse 4. And high look and a proud heart and the plowing of the wicked is sin. Now, some of your translations might not talk about the plowing of the wicked. It may say the lamp of the wicked is sin. How many of you got that in your translation, the lamp? And I was very curious, how could they get from plowing to a lamp? And it's because in the Hebrew, it's just two consonants, N, like N and R, and you can pronounce either near or nair. If you pronounce it near, it means plowing. If you pronounce it nair, it means lamp. And in the original Hebrew, they didn't have the pronunciation. They didn't have the vowels. All they had was consonants, and so. In some manuscripts, they've got near, and other was near, and that's how you get the two different things. So that's much to do about nothing. If you take the plowing thing, a haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin, the idea is that God not only hates pride, but every work that a wicked person sets out to do, the plowing of the wicked, anything they set out to do, if you take it to be the lamp, a haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked or sin. A lamp is the thing that person delights in. And so Everything that a wicked person delights in, like things like pride, are a sin before God. Verse 6. Verse 5. The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of everyone that is hasty, only to want. In other words, if you're hasty about things, if you don't follow through on things, if you're not diligent, you're going to find yourself in want, in need of things. Verse 6, the getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a vanity tossed to and fro of them that seek death. The getting of treasures by a lying tongue. Wealth that comes from telling lies. Wealth that comes from telling lies. A salesman who tells you something that's not true. Wealth that comes from telling lies vanishes like a mist and leads to death. Lying to make a deal, misrepresenting your product, that's not going to bring lasting wealth. God wants you to be a man or a woman of integrity. Verse 7, the robbery of the wicked shall destroy them because they refuse to do judgment. Another translation, because the wicked refuse to do what is just, their violence boomerangs and destroys them. Comes back and gets them. Verse 8, the way of a man is froward and strange, but as for the pure, his work is right. Or another translation puts it this way, the way of a guilty man is perverse, but as for the pure, his work is right. Verse 9, it is better to dwell in a corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Another translation, I like this. It is better to live alone in the corner of an attic than with a contentious wife in a lovely home. Solomon had how many wives? 700. 300 concubines. I think he knows a little bit about something about wives, maybe. On the other hand, maybe he doesn't know anything about wives. But you know what, to be honest, gang, there's a couple of these verses in this chapter about the contentious woman, the brawling woman, or whatever. And you know, frankly, it goes both ways. It goes both ways. Whether it's the wife or whether it's the husband, it's hard to live with a person who complains and criticizes all the time, isn't it? It's really hard. An efficiency expert. You know what an efficiency expert is? Somebody who figures out a better way of doing things. Efficiency expert. An efficiency expert concluded his lecture with a note of caution. You don't want to try these techniques at home. Why not? Asked somebody from the audience. Well, I've watched my wife's routine at breakfast for years, the expert explained. She made lots of trips between the refrigerator, the stove, the table, and the cabinets, often carrying a single item at a time. One day I told her, "Hun, why don't you try carrying several things at once?" "Well, did it save time?" said the guy in the front row. "Well, actually, yes," said the expert. "It used to take her 20 minutes to make breakfast. Now it only takes me 7. You know, when somebody's always picking at you, it's hard. It really is. It is very nice to be around people who are gracious, patient with you. We all feel that way, don't we? Don't we like to have that towards us, to have somebody? Well, you know, we got to look in the mirror every once in a while, too. You know, what are the things that really bug you about your spouse? Well, hold on here now. You know, are you being that contentious person? Would it be better for your spouse to be living in a corner in the attic than with you? Well, that's something to think about, isn't it? That's tough stuff. Verse 10. The soul of the wicked desireth evil. His neighbor findeth no favor in his eyes. In other words, you don't want to live next to somebody who's wicked. Another translation says, evil people love to harm others. Their neighbors get no mercy from them. So I hope you don't live next to a bad person. Hello? Hi? Oh, I did.
Done.
You're done? You're on the plane?
Yeah. I'm
you want to say anything to the church?
No, I'm so tired. Just say we're tired.
They're all listening. They're all listening to you.
Oh, God. I'm so tired.
Oh.
We didn't ever sleep last night. So.
Are you guys getting ready? You going to sleep the whole way?
I don't know. I'm hoping so. Last time on between Paris and Moscow was very strange. And then we're all hungry, but we'll see.
Who are you sitting with?
Nobody. We're all set up this time.
Really?
So I don't know. I'll probably be sitting by some Russians or French people or something. I don't know.
Huh. Well, and you're due to take off in, what, 20 minutes?
7:15.
Yeah.
Our time, whatever, 8:15 your time, yeah.
Huh.
But everybody made it through. They were actually, I can't think of his name.
Gary.
He said, Kira, sitting by me. That's cool.
Who?
Kira.
Huh.
She's sitting by me.
Cool.
He said that they were actually doing less tech stuff than they usually do, so that was kind of weird, but it took forever. I mean, I'm serious. We went through like three different things. So.
Did you get checked by American people?
I don't think so. I didn't ever see any. They didn't look like they were.
Huh. Okay.
Anyway. Oh, well. Well, this is very boring for everybody, I'm sure, but we're here, so.
Okay. Cool. Well, wonderful, okay. Sweetheart.
All right.
Okay. Well,
so I'll try to call you when I get to Paris, all right?
Okay. Great.
Hold me land for a second.
Okay.
Okay. Kira says hi.
Okay.
Okay.
Say hi from the church.
Are the South there?
Yes.
Oh, here. Hold on a second.
Hey, there.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. How are you? You want to say hi to the church?
Yeah. What?
You're speaking to the church right now.
I can't hear them.
Well, is that Stephanie?
I'm making an announcement right now. Oh, what?
Is that Stephanie?
It was Christina.
Oh, Christina.
Yeah. She just couldn't hear they were talking. You want to try again?
Yeah, you want to talk to Dara?
She doesn't want to do it again. I don't know. She's tired, too. She didn't know. She didn't know who she's talking to, though.
Okay.
Sorry. But, that's cool.
Okay.
So at least they speak English. All right. Well, we love you guys.
Okay.
We'll see you in a little bit.
We'll be praying for
bye.
You. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. I was hoping she would call during service. Yeah. That was live from Russia. How about that? Huh. Very cool. Okay, I've lost my place. Somebody help me. Where are we? Verse 11, probably, right? Verse 11. Okay, let's get through this thing. When the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. And when the wise is instructed, he receiveth knowledge. Now, the way I was looking at this is he's talking about two different kinds of people learn. There's the simple person and there's the wise person. The simple person learns by watching somebody getting the heck beat out of them. You know, when they see something, somebody going through, learning their lesson, well, they shape up and they go, whoa, I better pay attention. That sounds like what the first part is. The second part is the wise person, you just got to tell them. You just instruct them. You know, don't do this. They don't have to watch somebody fall flat on their face. You tell them about it and then they learn from that. So, I think it would probably be better to learn that way, don't you, than have to watch somebody go through tough stuff. Okay, verse 12. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked, but God overthroweth the wicked for their wickedness. Verse 13. Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. That's a little bit of you reap what you sow. If you are kind towards poor people, then when you're in need, God will take care of you. We read in Proverbs, 19:17 says, "He who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deed." So if you are kind towards others, kind towards poor people, then it kind of comes back on you, is what he's saying. You don't want to be a Scrooge. You want to be like Bob Cratchit. There you go. Okay, verse 14. A gift in secret pacifieth anger, and a reward in the bosom strong wrath. A gift in secret pacifieth anger. Now, some of the translations have the second word, the reward, being they call it, they'll translate it as a bribe. So it almost sounds like a bad thing, you know. But it could be. I guess you could see how bribes can help smooth things out. But I think he's just saying, look, you know, when you have a fight with somebody, a gift doesn't hurt. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath. Harsh words stir up strife. Well, we've talked about that, about how when you're in a fight with somebody, you can either calm things down with your words, or you could stir them up. Well, you can calm them down by saying gentle words. You could also maybe go get a box of chocolates. Okay? Move on. Okay. Box of chocolates. Verse 15. It is joy to the just to do judgment, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. In other words, just people love it when justice is done. Verse 16. The man that wandereth out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. Another translation. The person who strays from common sense will end up in the company of the dead. Just use common sense. There's these awards they hand out every year. It's called the Darwin Award. And it's made each year to the person who has managed to kill himself or herself in the most bizarre way imaginable. And this story was sent over to the Billings Gazette by Dr. Philip Hastrick at the Red Lodge, Montana Clinic. It was obtained from a radio station program, a true report of something that happened in Michigan. A guy buys a brand new Jeep Grand Cherokee for $30,000, has $400 monthly payments. He and a friend go duck hunting, and of course, all the lakes are frozen. These two atomic brains go to the lake with the guns, the dog, the beer, and of course, the new vehicle. They drive out on the lake ice and get ready. Now they want to make some kind of a natural landing for the ducks, something for the decoys to float on. In order to make a hole large enough to look like something a wandering duck might fly down and land on, it's going to take a little more effort than an ice hole drill. Out of the back of the new Cherokee comes a stick of dynamite with a short 40-second fuse. Now these two rocket scientists do take into consideration that if they place the stick of dynamite on the ice at the location far from where they are standing they take the risk of slipping on the ice when they run from the burning fuse and possibly go up in smoke with the resulting blast. So they decide to light the 40-second fuse and throw the dynamite. Okay? Remember a couple of paragraphs back when we mentioned that the vehicle, the beer, the guns, and the dog? The dog. A highly trained black Labrador retriever used for retrieving, especially things thrown by the owner. You guessed it. So the dog takes off at a high rate of doggy speed on the ice, captures the stick of dynamite with a burning 40-second fuse about the time it hits the ice. The two men yell, scream, wave arms, holler, and wonder what to do now. The dog, seemingly cheered on, keeps coming, wagging his tail like he's doing great. This is not for the faint of heart. One of the guy grabs his shotguns and shoots the dog. The shotgun is loaded with duck shot, hardly enough to stop a black lab. The dog stops for a moment, slightly confused, but continues on, doing what he was taught, retrieving anything thrown by his master. Another shot was fired, and this time the dog, still standing, now becomes really confused and, of course, scared, thinking that these two Nobel Prize winners have gone insane. The dog takes off to find cover, now with a now really short fuse burning on the stick of dynamite. And where does the dog find cover on a frozen lake? Underneath the new Jeep Grand Cherokee. Boom! The dog and the Cherokee are blown to bits and sink to the bottom of the lake in a very large hole, leaving the two candidates for co-leaders of the known universe standing there with this, I can't believe this happened, look on their face. The insurance company says that sinking a vehicle in a lake by illegal use of explosives is not covered in their policy. The owner had yet to make the first of those $400 plus a month payments. Well, the moral of the story is, use common sense. That's what Solomon says. Solomon says, the man that wandereth out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead, or the person who strays from common sense will end up in the company of the dead. Use common sense. Use common sense. Okay, that's enough of that. Verse 17. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. We understand wine. Oil in those days, it's not crude oil. We're talking about olive oil. And olive oil was one of those, it was an expensive thing. It was a thing of luxury. And so another way of saying it is those who love pleasure become poor. Wine and luxury are not the way to riches. If you have a desire for the good life, and that's your chief desire in life, you're going to be poor. That's what he's saying. You're going to end up spending more than you make trying to get the good life. And we'll get that again in verse 20. But for now, verse 18, the wicked shall be a ransom for the righteous and the transgressor for the upright. Another translation. Sometimes the wicked are punished to save the godly and the treacherous for the upright. Verse 19, it is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and an angry woman. Again, same thing. Another translation, it is better to live alone in the desert than with a crabby, complaining wife. It is tough to live with anyone who's like that. Sometimes it's, I don't know if we've got any single people in here. But you know what? It's a dangerous thing for a single person to get that desperate feeling. Like, I got to take anybody who's got a pulse. You know, anybody that I'll marry anybody who, as long as they got, as long as they fog the mirror when I put it in front of their face, then I'll take them, you know. No. Solomon says it'd be better to live alone in a desert than with a crabby and contentious person. J. Paul Getty, one of the richest men in the world, said, I would give my entire fortune for one happy marriage. If you got a happy marriage, God bless you. It is worth everything. Verse 20. There is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. Another translation, wise people store up the best foods and olive oil, but a foolish person eats up everything he has. Whether you're wise or foolish, are you saving or are you spending? That's what he's saying. You know, the wise person, you know, you can they have a store of stuff. The foolish person is spending it as quick as he can get it. Okay, verse 21. He that followeth after righteousness and mercy findeth life, righteousness, and honor. The word that's translated life the Hebrew word. It means life, but has different interesting ideas with the word. The idea of flowing, it's used for fresh water, it's used for revival, it's used for renewal. And those are kind of words that kind of interest me. Having to have freshness in your life, to have flowingness in your life, to have revival in your life. Well, it says, he that followeth after righteousness and mercy findeth life, righteousness and honor. If you want those things, life, righteousness, doing the right things, and honor from God, then he says, follow after righteousness and mercy. I really appreciate when people are righteous. I really appreciate when people are merciful. But follow after them. Make them a part of your life. Another translation says, whoever pursues godliness and unfailing love will find life, godliness, and honor. Another translation, a person who tries to live right and be loyal finds life, success, and honor. Verse 22. A wise man scaleth the city of the mighty and casteth down the strength of the confidence thereof. NIV says, a wise man attacks the city of the mighty and pulls down the stronghold in which they trust. Now, he's probably talking about, you know, strategy and warfare. A wise man knows how to attack a city, knows how to conquer a city. But I was thinking about how it kind of applies to people's philosophy, what people's view of life. That's what a good apologetics person will do. Is they will take the viewpoint that a person has, whether it's an atheist, a humanist, and take that city they've built up around themselves and know how to scale the walls and tear it down. Because that's what people do. People protect themselves with walls of ideas. And I was thinking, what a great verse for apologetics. You know, a wise man scaleth, that'd be a Dave Rittner verse. A wise man scaleth the city of the mighty and casteth down the strength of the confidence thereof. Verse 23, whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. New Living Translation says, if you keep your mouth shut, you will stay out of trouble. If you keep your mouth shut, you will stay out of trouble. I try that. I'm not always good at it. I sometimes let things leak out. But sometimes I think, I'm not in a good frame of mind, I better keep quiet. Sometimes we get in a lot of trouble just by opening our mouths. It was his first day on the job. He was a new clerk in the green goods department of a supermarket. A lady came up to him and said she wanted to buy half a head of lettuce. He tried to dissuade her from that goal, but she persisted. Finally he said, I'll have to go back and talk to the manager. So she wants to buy half a head of lettuce. He went to the rear of the store to talk to the manager, not noticing that the woman was walking right behind him. He got into the back of the store. He said to the manager, there's some stupid old bag out there who wants to buy a half a head of lettuce. What should I tell her? Seeing the horrified look on the face of the manager, he turns around and seeing the woman, he added, and this nice lady wants to buy the other half of a head of lettuce. Will that be all right? Considerably relieved, the manager said that would be fine. Later in the day, he congratulated the boy on his quick thinking. He then asked, where are you from, son? The boy said, I'm from Toronto, Canada, the home of beautiful hockey players and ugly women. The manager looked at him and said, my wife is from Toronto. And the boy said, oh, what team did she play for? I'm usually not that quick on my feet. It's better to just keep your mouth shut sometimes, isn't it? You know, sometimes we say the stupidest things, and you cannot get those words back. Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue, keepeth his soul from trouble. Verse 24. Proud and haughty scorner is his name who dealeth with proud wrath. So somebody whose life is surrounded with proud wrath, they're proud, they're haughty, and they're angry all the time. Makes me think of some of the political stump speeches I've been hearing lately. You hear a lot of pride and you hear a lot of anger. And it says you can call this person, give them a new name, call them proud or haughty scorner, verse 25. The desire of the slothful, and actually verses 25 and 26 kind of go together. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. So the desire of the slothful killeth him. The word desire means a wish, the longings of one's heart, his lust, his appetite. One translation says, the sluggard's craving will be the death of him because his hands refuse to work. Another translation said, it gives an idea of what the lust of the lazy person is. He says, the lazy person's desire for sleep will kill him because he refuses to work. But maybe it's more than just the desire to sleep. It's the things that he wants. He wants stuff, but he'll never get them because he's too lazy to get up off the sofa. It says he coveteth greedily all the day long. All day long. He's, I want this. I want that. Oh, if I could only have that. But it says, then he contrasts it with the slothful with the righteous. He says, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. The lazy person is caught up in dreaming of the things he craves. He spends his day dreaming about this or about that. I want this. I want that. I want this. I want that. Whereas the righteous person is not caught up about craving things. The righteous person is caught up in giving to others and not holding back. What a contrast. Where am I at? Oh, I'd hate to admit where I'm at. I think I'm a little bit on the lazy side. Because I know there's a whole bunch of stuff. I wish I had this. I wish I had that. The righteous is more concerned about giving than about craving. Where are you on the line? Verse 27. The sacrifice... Where am I? Verse 27. The sacrifice of the wicked is abomination. How much more when he bringeth it with a wicked mind. Or another translation, God loathes the sacrifice of an evil person, especially when it is brought with ulterior motives. We kind of mentioned something about this before, about God doesn't like God would much rather that we learn to obey than to sacrifice. You don't want to be doing something wicked with a thought in your head that you'll make up for it by giving God a gift. Verse 28, a false witness shall perish, but the man that heareth speaketh constantly. That's kind of a tough one. What in the world is he talking about? A false witness shall perish, but the man that heareth speaketh constantly. Well, I'll tell you the truth. I don't think translators have figured this one out because I've looked at four different translations, got four different ideas. Here's one that says, a false witness will be cut off. This one made the most sense. A false witness will be cut off, but an attentive witness will be allowed to speak. Now that one makes sense. That one fits. I could see that one in the King James. We'll go ahead. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Could be. Where it says, then a man heareth, he speaketh constantly. And where you're saying that, where the your idea was that speaking, but he speaks the truth. NIV says a false witness will perish and whoever listens to him will be destroyed forever. And that's like totally different. So whoever listens to a false witness will perish is what it said. New American Standard says a false witness will perish But the man who listens to the truth will speak forever. That's more like, that's like yours. Was yours, are you reading New American Standard? Your message, okay. New King James says, a false witness shall perish, but the man who hears him will speak endlessly. So, he's like, here's like four different ideas. Which is it? I don't know. Flip a coin. It could be, but you know what? I do like where it says a false, King James, a false witness shall perish, but the man that heareth speaketh constantly. I like the way the New Living Translation said, a false witness will be cut off, but an attentive witness, which is the one that heareth, an attentive witness will be allowed to speak. Let's see, that makes sense. You know, a guy who paid attention, you know, to the crime. Well, you want him to speak. Boy, you could kind of even apply that to witnessing, couldn't you? A false witness will be cut off, but an attentive witness will be allowed to speak. Interesting. Verse 29. A wicked man hardeneth his face, but as for the upright, he directeth his way. International Children's Bible says, a wicked person is stubborn, but an honest person thinks carefully about what he does. A wicked person is stubborn. I was thinking about this because that tends to be me. My wife's always telling me about this, that she'll come up with an idea and I'll say, no, no way. And then about a week later, I come up with this great idea, which is what she, you know, suggested a week earlier. You know, I'm pretty stubborn. I can be really, really stubborn. Are you stubborn when you're faced with someone who challenges your ideas, or do you take time to listen and think it through? I think sometimes I'm stubborn because I don't want to dare admit that maybe I could be wrong. You know, but I need to think things through. A wicked person is stubborn, but an honest person thinks carefully about what he does. Verse 30, there is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. Another translation, there is no wisdom, understanding, or advice that can succeed against the Lord. If you want your plans to succeed, don't put yourself in a place where you're fighting God. Because there's no way you're going to win. If you find that you're in a place where you're fighting God, you're going to lose every time. There's no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. Verse 31, the horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety is from the Lord. You can get the horses ready for battle, but it is the Lord who gives the victory. I think that's a great verse for our nation, don't you? God bless our president. God bless our military. Very grateful for our president. Very grateful for our military. But you know what? We as a nation have got to be, we've got to get a hold of the fact that real safety comes from the Lord. We should do our best, absolutely. But you know what? Safety belongs to the Lord. The Bible's filled with stories of battles where the smaller guy wins. It's not always the big guy that wins. God can help small ones win too. So it's not the size of the army as much as it is God with us. Safety comes from the Lord. And with that, we're done. Let's stand and pray.